Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 174, recorded Monday, November 3rd, 2014. Burt Monroy. Triangulation is brought to you by NatureBox. NatureBox ships great-tasting snacks right to your door. Start snacking smarter with wholesome, delicious treats like baked cheddar potato sticks. Oh, baby. To get your complimentary NatureBox sampler, visit naturebox.com/twit. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we talk to some of the most interesting people in technology. I enjoy doing this every week so much. I hope you do too, because I get to talk to so many great people. Many times, lately a lot, I've brought in people that I already know, but never really have a chance to talk to much. And this cat is one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. I'm so glad to be able to spend an hour with Burt Monroy. Burt, it's great to see you.
It's so good to be here.
Photoshop guru, digital artist. You consider yourself an artist first?
Yeah, I do that. I actually teacher artist.
Yeah.
Because most of what I'm seen in public is as a teacher. As an artist, I learn all the little tricks, and then I teach them to everybody else. So most people know me as a teacher.
Yeah. You're kind of the logical successor to Bob Ross.
I've been called that a lot, the digital
without
Bob Ross.
Without the afro.
Well, I can kind of tease this up.
Even the ponytail Bob Ross.
Yeah, but that's the same kind of thing. In fact, when I'm on stage many times, I'll throw in a little happy trees in there. You know, if I'm doing something with trees. Well, my latest piece is nothing but trees, but I'll throw in the little happy trees. And the gray hairs in the audience will all laugh, you know.
They know Bob Ross.
They know Bob Ross.
I don't know what he's talking about. Yep. But that's nice. It's subtle.
Yeah.
So we met first, I think, when you were doing the screensavers.
Yes.
How did we get together? I don't remember how that happened.
They called me to come in and do a little segment on Photoshop. And supposedly the response was so positive.
Incredible.
I came back and I did it every month for 3.5 years.
Wow.
A couple of times I did twice a month. And then I had the two specials, one that I did at Photoshop World and one where you and I did my best stuff from the year one Christmas.
That was fun.
Yeah.
So you would show us a technique every time. I remember brick walls was one.
Yes.
You know, so you'd take my name and you'd do something crazy with it. Or you show how.
Yeah, I did neon in your name.
Neon
I did a bunch
name.
Of stuff. Yeah.
And it always seemed so simple when you did it. It would be like, oh, you just do this and this and this. And I'd think, I got it. I always would, because that's why you're such a great teacher. I go, I got it. And I go home and I say, I don't got it.
Yeah. Once you start looking through, it's like, what was that?
What? It's hard. So you're obviously, now let me ask you how you got your start. And then we're going to take a look at your latest work, which you're about to unveil. And that's very exciting.
Well, actually, I unveiled it at Adobe Max last month.
Okay.
It's been
you're going to tour the world with this, I imagine.
Yes, yeah. I actually just this morning got invited to Amsterdam to show it, which is what the subject of the painting is.
That's
a canal in Amsterdam. So it's getting some nice play, mainly because not the piece itself, but because of how you view the piece. It's the first one I've done that you actually have to see online to really get the full impact of it.
Oh, interesting. So, we'll show people how to do that.
You'll see why. Yeah.
The last one you did was Times Square. It was incredible, the detail.
Yeah, four years of work, yeah.
What?
4 years of work.
4 years?
Yeah.
Now, do you work on little other side paintings just to keep yourself interested?
Well, that was nothing but a lot of side paintings. There was just so many. There's over, I say, somewhere around 15,000 different files that went into it. You know, I have a little file for the ice cream truck, and there's a separate file for the different things in the window and the signs and everything else. So every element is totally different. It was very, very intriguing piece because of the fact that everything was different. Unlike something like Dame in the Train Station, where it was girder, 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 track, track, track.
Love that one too.
Yeah, where Times Square was every little corner, everywhere you look, it's totally different.
So you're now, you remind me a little bit of kind of a pointillist or somebody who spends years doing a single painting. And what was the total output of, I can't remember his name, the most famous pointillist, like eight paintings.
Seurat.
Yeah, Seurat.
Yeah.
wasn't very many paintings.
No, no. There's quite a few people.
Takes
were,
like, 4 years.
Vermeer, he didn't produce a lot of work either. You know, there's
very
a certain artist that
painstaking detail.
Yeah, they just get into it. And the same thing with me. I just get into so much detail. That's part of the fun. This new piece took 22 months, so basically it's not
that much at all. Nothing.
Last one was, because I've done two since Times Square, and the last one was, I didn't learn anything. I just did it because I wanted to kill some time. It took about 2 months. It was a theater in Ventura. And so it was just neons.
There I remember that one.
New.
Yeah,
there's nothing new. And so it was kind of fun.
So you're trying to learn something with each painting. You have a goal or in your mind? Or
Well, it's usually something that's challenging. Like this new piece, what was challenging was the atmosphere because it's in the fog. So I wanted to get that. I've tried fog before, but now things are working the way they are that I thought it'd be a time to try it again. And it worked out.
Our guest is Bert Monroy. And he is a digital artist, a Photoshop guru. I want to talk about how you got started doing this and your early days, because I think you were probably, in fact, I think I remember that you wrote the first book on Photoshop.
I co-wrote the first book, yes.
Yeah, Alpha Channels, was that it?
No, it was called the Official Adobe Photoshop Handbook.
Wow.
The one that had to do with Alpha Channels was Channel Chops, which came,
Channel Chops.
Came in 1996.
I have that book.
Long time later. But that first book, it was the official Adobe Photoshop. Right. There was a rewrite of it, the second edition, but I didn't have anything to do with it. The two of us didn't have anything to do with it, and this new guy did the rewrite, so Adobe forced him to take official off the title.
Because it's now unofficial.
And I wasn't official
anymore. You're the official one.
I was the official. Then it was the only book for almost 2 years until the Wow book came out.
Right.
Yeah, but that's because I was using Photoshop 2 years before Adobe knew it existed.
You were the guy.
Yeah,
yeah, so this was before Photoshop was owned by Adobe. It was when it was originally. Was it the Knoll brothers that originally did it?
Yes.
And then sold it to Adobe.
Yes.
I got it. Yeah, we'll talk more about this. And I want to know what you studied, how you got to where you went. But don't tell me yet.
Okay.
That's a tease for more with Bert Monroy coming up in just a little bit. But we like to start our show with snacks.
Snacks. Oh, yeah. Those are always good.
It's Nature Box time. These are snacks that get delivered to your door monthly from naturebox.com.
Ooh, look at that.
Oh, these are good snacks too. Whole wheat, figgy bars. All of these are more than 100 different
healthy stuff.
You got it immediately, yeah. Didn't you? Maybe you saw the nutritionist approve.
No, I could just tell by the packaging.
You could tell by the name. Yeah. Or watermelon fruit chews.
Yeah.
Instead of the gummy bears you're giving your kids today, give them these. They will love them. But what's nice, no high fructose corn syrup, no trans fats. You can also choose your Nature Box savory, sweet, spicy if you want. They have Nature Boxes for vegans, for gluten conscious folks. So you get to kind of narrow it down. I just say, send me what you got, because they're so wild. Look at all the different sea salt, sun crunch, cranberry medley.
You're holding garlic plantains.
Garlic Ooh, plantains.
That sounds
Who
great.
Who ever thought of that? What's in here? Plantains, non-hydrogenated vegetable oil, dried garlic, salt, spices.
That is?
It's good stuff. Now, here's the deal. We got a free trial box. You can go to naturebox.com/twit. You just pay $2 shipping and handling, and you'll get a sampler. And that, I think we decided that's the best way for you to get an idea of what Nature Box has to offer, because my mouth's watering just thinking about it. They're so delicious. And it's so nice to have this every month for your kids, for your office, so that you're not, you know, when you get, everybody gets a little hungry in the afternoon, but you don't want to reach for that candy bar. You want to reach for a Nature Box. These are resealable bags, which is very nice. And let's see, they got new packaging. Please pardon our crumbs.
That's great.
That's really awesome. That's great. And then they talk about the treats in your Nature Box and how to get more. And what's nice is these are mailed to you. Shipping is covered on it anywhere in the United States. It really is awesome. They're even green, and that's a nice thing. They tell you about how they make sure that everything they do is green. Naturebox.com/twit. Get your free sampler. That's simple, easy. And then beware, because once you get hooked on NatureBox, well, it's good. That comes to your...
It's healthy.
It's healthy.
Are they in California? Or
everywhere.
Oh, okay.
Where are they based?
Yeah,
that's
it sounds
a good
like
question.
A California company.
It does sound like an earthy, crunchy kind of a company. Let me look. I don't know. Does anybody know where they are based? Does seem like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
San Carlos, California. They're just down our way. Yeah. I didn't even realize they were local. Bay Area. Of course they are. Of course they are. And you also have a personal snack concierge.
at Nature Bar.
Gotta have one of those, yes.
I'm going to ask my snack concierge.
So, Burt Monroy, did you study art in school? You must have gone to an art school.
Yes, I did. Yes, yeah. I did.
So you knew you wanted to be an artist?
Always did. My mother had my first recognizable drawing. I was 2 years old at the time.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
And I was always in trouble. Always in trouble for drawing in class. So,
I think that every artist I know, it's like they can't help but draw.
Yeah,
they just
constantly drawing.
Have to.
Yeah, it's just this urge that I'm taking a test and there'll be little doodles on the side of the test. You know, I just like to draw. And I was in eighth grade looking at high schools, and Sister St. Helen, I'll never forget Sister St. Helen, she said to me, you know, you've been in trouble your entire life for this. Why don't you study it formally? So she suggested the High School of Art and Design in New York.
Good for her.
And I took the test, and I got accepted, and that was the beginnings of it.
That's
from
neat.
There, it was a actual commercial sense of, you know, I majored in advertising and illustration. But that was it. That was the beginnings of my actual formal training and the future of being an artist.
And you were originally using ink?
My last preferred medium before I went digital was actually a thing called Dr. Martin's dyes, radiant dyes. They were a watercolor. Mm-hmm. And what I would do is I would lay a base coat of these dyes for the basic color, and then using Eagle very thin pencils, very thin because they were hard lead, so they would hold a point, I would then go in there and sketch up all the little fine details. So that's pretty much my preferred style for most of my adult years until I went digital.
It actually kind of makes sense because it's a very fine, detailed, precise thing, which is still what you do to this day.
Except I had to work really big to get the detail.
Did those watercolors kind of give it a glow from within?
Yes, they did. They were radiant dyes, so they were very bright colors because I like things very saturated. And so these were very bright colors, and I used brushes, even toilet paper, depending on what I wanted to do, the airbrush. Whatever I thought was recognized, I'd go in there and just use something, whatever was necessary, sponges, depending on the effect that I wanted.
Well, that's what always interests me, because artists often are very tactile. They like the materials. They like the media they're working with. Mm-hmm. It often is very, you know, I'm really in there. And when you go digital, you lose all of that, don't you?
Well, I touch my hard drives a lot, you know. And I look at the screen, I touch the screen.
At first, when you first started doing it, it was a little disconnect because there's no more toilet paper, there's nothing wet, there's nothing.
Well, the disconnect was in the fact that I had been used to doing like this, and now suddenly I was doing this thing on the side.
That's hard. You're doing a mouse.
The bar of soap, and looking up at the screen. That was a little tough, but I was so intrigued by the whole concept that I didn't really feel a disconnect. I really got into it, and I really enjoyed what I was doing.
What was the first drawing program you used?
Mac Paint. Yeah.
So this was the 84, 85?
1984.
You got the original Mac.
Yes. That's what did it.
First computer?
Yeah. I had seen computer graphics because I was in advertising, and I had hired people, but these were usually Harry's and Quantel's with big, gigantic machines, and I never worked on them because I remember I wanted a nice gradient sky, and the guy inputs coordinates for the upper left going out to the coordinates, and then the color, you know, and that's not me. I wanted to. Whereas this, I had an ad agency in New York, and my partner said we had to computerize. So he said, I said, fine, get your computers, but, you know, don't bother me with it. So he said, there's a new computer you could do your layouts on. So I went down to the store to look at this little thing called a Macintosh, and I sat down and I drew a box. That's cool. And then I grabbed the box and moved it. And that was cool because then I realized I'm going to save on tracing paper, working pieces around to get the right composition. And then by accident, I went into what is called fat bits. I suddenly was like, what is this?
That was
I don't
the
know
magnifying
where I am.
Lens.
Yeah, it was a little only one level of a zoom, but it brought me in, and that's what clicked.
You could actually see the pixels and click. You weren't even really drawing at that point. You
were and I used to work so tight with magnifying glasses, and I realized I can zoom
this
in. So that's what clicked to me and said, this is the future. So I was in that store every day using it until my machine got delivered because they weren't delivering yet. They weren't shipping yet. So I was actually I think it was that Friday, I was doing demos of Mac Paint in the store. I had mastered it
right
already.
From the beginning.
Yeah, I just was in there.
Yeah, figure
this
out. Let me show you.
Yeah, and so sure enough, I gave up the entire ad agency business and started a whole business around the Mac. That summer of 84, I put out the package called Human Forms that allowed you to build human body parts. It was over 1,000 parts, forearms, hands, different positions. And then you had a little crosshair, and you would then connect these parts to assemble human bodies.
So did you go, you found a programmer and said, here, I've got the body parts?
No, they were just Mac paint files.
So you didn't even have a program. No. It was just, here's the files.
Yep, and then all I had to do was take the lasso, surround the thing, connect the two crosshairs, and then erase the crosshair.
That's called really taking to it, where you go immediately, I get what you can do with this. And not only that, I'm going to make a tool so other artists can do stuff too.
Yeah.
And you started teaching right away.
Yeah, I started teaching Mac Paint the fall of that same year.
Yeah.
I was at School of Visual Arts, which I had attended. I started teaching there, teaching things like Mac Paint.
At first, was there, I imagine some artists were interested in this right away.
Yeah, but it was, for most people, mostly it was a toy.
Yeah.
There was quite a few of us. And the good thing about that is that there were so few of us that anybody who was doing something with graphics would send it to me and say, hey, what do you think it is? How can it make better? So I got to see a lot of things before they came out.
I remember that early. Those early days of Macintosh were really exciting because you could know everybody who was involved.
Yeah.
You could see every piece of software.
Yep.
And it was, of course, Susan Kare who did the amazing, not only the icons, but I think she did the Japanese woman brushing her hair.
Yes, she did.
Very famous
that was
painting.
And all the Image Writer ads and stuff.
And you'd see that and you'd go, oh, you can do real art with Mac Paint.
Yep.
She was brilliant with the, but she was like you. She liked working in what we now call an 8-bit mode, where it's blocky like that.
That was a 2-bit. It was just black and white.
It wasn't 8-bit. It was 2.
8-bit was when
it was one.
Pixel Paint
on or off.
Yeah. The Mac 2 came out.
It was on or off. There was no gradient. There was no, but and you couldn't alias because you didn't have gray. You just had black and white.
Black and white. Yep.
And yet you can still make art.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always tell people, you give anybody a whole box full of fantastic tools and everything, and they won't do anything. But you give an artist a piece of chalk or charcoal, he's going to create something.
In some ways, it's the limits are part of what makes it interesting, right? Mm-hmm. What can I do with this?
Yeah. Every new feature that comes out, it's like a challenge. Like there's this new tree and flame and border function that's in Photoshop. And it's nice, flames, but they give you all these parameters you can mess with. So immediately I just did an episode of my show that where I take this flame, and instead of flame, it's this blue kind of weird mesmerizing thing that comes out. You know, so it's just a question of pushing the buttons, which I tell all my students. I forget what things are called. Look at those windows, the control windows, and play with those buttons. Punch those buttons to see what they do. Because sometimes, especially with filters and layer styles, they have specific names. But by changing the parameters, they'll do something totally different from what you expect.
Yeah, the name Fire is almost misleading.
Yeah.
It's like, don't let that get in your way.
Yeah, Motion Blur is a good example. Motion Blur, okay, just does a little blur. But that blur can be used for so many. I tell people, like, out of 400 times that I use Motion Blur, maybe one will be for Motion Blur. Everything else will be for, like, a reflection of something or a stretching of a shadow or something like that. So it's just a question of knowing what you need to do, and somewhere in there, there's a tool to do it.
You were made to do it. If the Macintosh hadn't come along, what would you be doing right now?
I can't even imagine what I'd be doing now.
this medium was, you were made for it.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely became my medium. I love it. And every new thing that comes out just gets more exciting. And the thing is that I'm back to the way I was. I now work on a Cintiq, so I'm back to that hand-eye coordination.
It's so much better now than it was.
Yeah.
But it didn't deter you that you had to use it. How long did you use a mouse? It must have been a long time. Wacom didn't.
Yeah,
come along.
I didn't use a tablet until the optical mouse, because I was working on 2 cinema displays, and I tend to work with little tiny brushes. So it's like, where's my cursor? And I start doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, there it is. And then I slowly bring it down to it. And so then when I went to a tablet, because the upper left hand corner,
it's 1-to-1.
Yeah. So you know exactly where you are.
This is here, that's there. Yeah.
And then when the Cintiq came out, that was it. I was in heaven.
So that's the natural gradation. With a mouse, it's relative, and you're moving something and it moves on the screen. With a tablet, at least now when I tap the upper left hand corner, but it's still disconnected. I'm tapping here, and it comes out there. So what the Cintiq does now is you're drawing
right on
the screen.
Yeah, right on the screen.
So it's very much like drawing on a piece of paper or a canvas.
Yeah.
Except that it's all digital.
Yeah.
So I mean, you're really early on this. No, I mean, there are a handful of people doing this kind of art, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And you're teaching right away, so you're growing the number of people.
Yes.
How did you meet the Knoll brothers? How did that happen?
My partner, Dave Vietney, the guy who co-wrote the book with me, he was a technical editor at MacUser magazine back then. So he would get a lot of this stuff. And they sent it to him. And I was his partner, so he immediately showed it to me.
This is
so
pre-release.
That's how we got it.
Huh? Pre-release.
Yeah. It was still called Display at the time.
It's called Display.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
What were you using before then? Was there between
paint.
Mac Paint?
Pixel paint. In fact, I was called Mr. Pixel Paint.
You were. You were the king of Pixel Paint.
I was doing all Pixel Paint stuff.
And that was a big step up from Mac Paint, for one thing, because it was color, right?
Yeah, it was color. It was the first really true tool on a Mac 2 for painting. Was Pixel Paint. There was a lot that Modern Artists and Studio 8. There was many that came out. But my favorite was Pixel Paint from the very beginning.
What was it that made Pixel Paint better?
Well, color. color was really important. There were a lot of little hidden features in there. And it, in its original state, was kind of rough because you were limited to 256 colors. But, you know, you had to take up those 256 colors. Like, if you wanted a nice, smooth gradient in the sky, a big part of that palette would be taken up with those blues.
Right.
Because you would get banding. So the more blues, the smoother the gradient. Then with 2.0, they came out with dithering, which now, if you went from a white to a gray, it would create a little pattern in between that would
just fool
the eye.
Just don't look too close.
Yeah, don't look too close. But it would create that pattern so that if you stood back, you would see a nice smooth gradient.
Yeah.
So.
You sounds like you like tools that have lots of hidden features, that have lots of little nooks and crannies.
Well, they all kind of do.
Now they do, for sure.
Yeah, well, even then, even more so. In fact, I remember Pixel Paint had this cool feature, the tree function, which was never advertised. But if you held down the option button and click with the pencil tool, you would get a tree. Fractal trees that were always
cool.
Different, right? If you held the option and shift, you would get a tree that would be the foreground color and berries that were the background color.
That's so cool.
And the way you find these things is, well, I've always, every piece
keys.
Of software I ever had, I never had a manual because I always get
You don't
it
read
early.
Manuals.
So I would hold down the option button and run my finger across the keyboard.
Wow.
And that's how you'd find all these little things.
That's hysterical.
Because they just suddenly, what was that? And I tried to replicate, there it is. I'd find some little Easter egg.
So you get this early copy of Display. It's not even called Photoshop yet. Did you meet the brothers?
Yes, I met them. We spoke on the phone a few times, and I met them sometime later. Yeah. In fact, I even worked for John at Industrial Light and Magic for a while because he was an effects supervisor there.
He's still there.
Yeah, and he's still there. Yeah. And I was there for a short time when I moved to California.
He's a legend.
Yeah, he's quite a guy.
So John and Thomas had some insight into how a computer works and how it has its relationship to art.
Yes.
That is fundamental to understanding Photoshop. Can you've explained this to me before, and I don't remember it. What is it that Photoshop really does at the very base?
Okay, at the very base is it improves your photography. Okay? Photo's in the name, and most people think of it in...
A photo retoucher.
Yeah, in fact, most people think that my stuff is I'm working over photographs or whatever.
Because it's so realistic.
Yeah, but that is its basic function, and the majority of the people, that's what they do. They bring in a picture, they'll play with saturation a little bit, bump up the contrast, clean up a little blemish here, and that's it. Mm-hmm. But there's so many features in Photoshop that somebody who's going to go in there and really get into it is going to be able to do anything they can imagine.
But I'm thinking at the programmatic level. Maybe it wasn't you who told me. Maybe it was Alex Lindsay, who's another Photoshop guru.
Yeah, he is.
But Photoshop is doing something at the very lowest level of the program that really informs everything that comes out of it. And I wish I could remember
that sounds
what it is. Yeah. It's some understanding of the way you see things that gives them so much capability. I mean, really, even with Pixel Paint, it was a great leap to go to Photoshop, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was. In fact, Photoshop was a great leap for a lot of people. I was still in New York at the time, and it was Photoshop that really convinced the ad agencies to start going towards digital.
It's just like digital photography. It wasn't good enough, wasn't good enough, wasn't good enough.
Until it became great.
And then it got good enough. And then exactly. Yeah. It took off. And then now you're crazy if you don't do it.
Right. Well, in fact, now you... usually can't get a job unless you have knowledge of this stuff in the graphic arts industry.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I had a guy come to me to one of my classes once, older gentleman, and he'd been with this company for over 30 years, and they told him that unless he went digital, he would have to be
So you taught him?
Yeah, I taught him, yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah, there was one ad agency, because I started and helping to convert ad agencies in New York when these things came out. And I remember one agency, there was this one guy working on this this one account, and he was putting out five comps a week, comprehensive, what you show the client.
Mm-hmm.
I taught him Illustrator, and on the first day, he did 51. So he went from five in a week to 51 in a day. So, yes, it definitely improved
things.
That's
a big difference.
Big difference,
in productivity, anyway. It was Thomas Knoll who was kind of the genius.
Yeah, it was a project. He's the one that started. And then when John saw it, John saw it.
And John was at ILM at the time and said, wow, I could use this.
Yeah, and he figured out that, we can take this a lot further, and they did.
And it's still something at the very lowest level of what Photoshop does, even with camera, with the Adobe Camera Raw, which, as I understand, Thomas works on.
Yeah, that's his little
thing. There's some magic that this guy is such a genius that he just is doing something that is amazing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, he is somewhat of a genius. He can come up with these things that, he knows a lot of artists. Okay, so
that's good. So you talk to him and you say, I need this, or this is what it's not right here. This is not quite right.
Well, I don't tell it to him necessarily. I get whole engineering teams from Adobe Company Studio. They come
Mr.
and spend
Monroy.
A day.
Yeah, Mr. Monroy.
Yeah, they come to my studio. They see it as a off-site, and they come over. We hang out in the woods. You know, it's kind of fun, and we'll talk. Like, I remember I had the 3D team once. Like 14 people or something came into my studio. I had the painting team, which was only three of them, and they came and we just sit there and we talk, and I say what could be better, what could, where something should go, what should be put in, and so on.
It's really good, in fact. It's great that they talk to artists and want to know.
Yeah, I think it's crucial because they're the ones that are ultimately going to use this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So what is it that makes Photoshop unique? Is it layers? Is it channels? One of your first books was this Channel Chops book.
Yeah, actually, that was the third.
Third book.
Third book.
After the manuals.
The layers came out in version 3.
So that was later.
Yeah, that was much later. That didn't make it to version 3. And in fact, I remember I was brought down to this room in Stanford to see this.
Yeah.
Okay? They put me in this room, and a very brightly lit room with cameras all over the place, a lot of lights, and then a big mirror in front of me. So I knew that had
they're watching
to
you. Yeah. So I knew what does Bert do with it?
So I said, so who's back there? And I hear giggling, and I knew Mark Hamburg was back there. And so I open up Photoshop, and there I see it hit my eye right away, layers.
You
I
knew immediately.
The menu.
Something
I said,
different.
Layers. So I started playing with it, and I remember my first comment was, how come I can't do something to two layers at once? That's the first thing I said. And I said, and I heard the whispering back there. And that's, eventually you were able to select multiple
and the layer
layers,
transforms became very a big important part.
Yeah, well, the layer styles then came up in version 6.
Mm-hmm.
Then they were modified for 7, and then they got the look that they pretty much have now.
So what are channels? Because did they have channels from the beginning?
Yeah, channels have been there. Channels not part of Photoshop. Channels are the way an image is made up. You got your red, green, and blue.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah,
or
so those are your
CMYK
channels.
And print.
CMYK for print. So each
cyan,
channel,
yellow, magenta, black.
Precisely. They are, each channel is basically one of the colors of the image.
Right.
Then you have the additional channels, like alpha channels, which, again, are not part of their part of Photoshop, but they didn't come with Photoshop.
They didn't invent it.
No. That was actually Ed Catmull and Alvy Ray Smith. They invented the
legendary names.
They had this weird idea that somewhere somebody might want to put two pictures together. So the alpha channel was kind of like an opacity mask. So it allowed you to put things together with having things around it show. But that alpha channel was an 8-bit channel, which all of a sudden became a masking channel, which in Photoshop, it's a way of having very specialized selections.
You do this all the time. In fact, that's one of the first things you create is a layer
alpha
mask.
Channels, yeah.
All right, but we'll get to that in a second, because we're going to get some demo action
sure,
in just
okay.
a second. Did you... So you're really kind of invested in Photoshop, but there are all these others. There's Canvas, there's Paint, there's all these other Painter. Did you try each of them as they came out?
Yes, I have.
And reject them and say, no, back to Photoshop?
I'll tell you a little story about Painter.
I loved Painter.
This is, I can't remember. It's had to be 1985,
The idea of painter was that it was natural material. You were kind of working
the
with
natural materials, yes, which were, well, there's a lot of stories in this one. But I remember it's at a Macworld, and these two guys, Mark Zimmer and Tom Hedges, had rented a chair in somebody else's booth, and they're showing this thing called gray paint. They called me over. They wanted to show me this thing, and I thought it was really cool. It had an airbrush that really created...
I remember. Yeah. I was at that Macworld. Something.
So it was gray paint, and they wanted to do something with it. So at the time, I was a consultant for Letraset, the British company,
right.
And I met them because of the Thunderscan. Remember the Thunderscan?
Yeah.
Well, when that came out, I flew to London to try to convince them to let me take all their press type sheets, mm-hmm. which they had. Not just the type, but they had like
my dad used
renderings.
To get these. When he did his books, he would use Letrasets. Yeah. This is pre-digital era.
Yeah, it was the transfer page.
Transfers.
Well, they had architectural things like trees and cars.
Right.
I wanted to take those and put them on disc.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Well, they said there was no market for that.
They said they'll put you're going to put us out of business, yeah. is what they said.
But they kept me as a consultant, and so I convinced them to buy this gray paint because it was really cool. It changed the name to Realist. It eventually became Image Studio.
Oh, yeah.
Image Studio was the first image manipulation program, okay? It evolved to what was called a Color Studio.
But these are still bitmapped images, right? It's not these, vectors yet.
No, there were no vectors in that, at that time, though Illustrator had already come out. But it allowed the machine at the time was the Mac Plus. That was a machine that was out at the time. And
that meant, it had 128K of no?
No.
512K of RAM.
Yeah.
All right.
The 512 had the 512. The Plus had a whole megabyte.
A meg.
A whole megabyte.
A megabyte of RAM.
Yep.
Not a gigabyte.
No.
A megabyte.
Gigabyte was just those other
things. That was a dream. That was a fantasy someday.
And, well, I remember when I got my first 20 meg drive, I thought I had all the applications, all my... All this, I'll never need more.
That Seagate MFM drive? Yeah,
yeah.
20 megs.
And Times Square is 6.52 gigabytes. And never mind the files that go with it. So the folder.
Now we're sounding like old timers on the porch here.
But anyway, when Image Studio became Color Studio, it was like $1,200. And this new program had just come out from Adobe called Photoshop, which was only $395 at the time. So it kind of beat out Color Studio.
Just by price alone.
Yeah. And so what happened is Letraset finally got out of the business. They had been screwing up all along.
Isn't that sad? Because, I mean, they really owned the business
but they didn't know digital. And so what happened then is that Mark and Tom took it back, and they sold it to Meta Creations and renamed it Painter.
Oh.
So that's the beginnings of Painter. Huh. Painter is the evolution of the first of these kind of programs.
And I loved Painter because you felt like you were, it was oil.
Yeah.
Or it was a marker and it had the marker look.
Yes.
And so
yes.
You really felt like you were working with real materials. Now, I'm not an artist, but I was always surprised that you would choose something like Photoshop, which felt more clinical than something like Painter, which felt more natural.
Yeah, it felt more natural, but... the way he got stuff, I didn't like. I was always fighting with Mark about the interface. I did not like the interface. The Photoshop interface was a little more intuitive. People could, because like I remember Kai Krause.
Kai Krause, Kai's power goo.
Yeah, he used to say about how the interface is part of it, and how you.
He was
and to
big
me,
on that.
It was like, you know, if I'm using a paintbrush, I'm not concerned with where these sables came from.
Right.
How did they wrap them into this little? This is a brush. I want to use it to now work.
Right.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on the interface. The interface gets in the way if you have to spend a lot of time trying to figure it out.
My mom used to use Dabbler, which was dumbed down.
Mark and Tom wrote that too.
It was kind of a dumbed down painter, but it felt easier to use because you had a palette, like a real painter's palette, and all of that stuff.
In fact, my 48th birthday. Yeah, my 48th birthday. I threw a big party, and Mark Zimmer was the second person to arrive. The first thing he did is he went up to my studio and he needed to commandeer my machine because he was going to spend a day demoing Dabbler, and that was short lived because the minute other people came, that was it. The machine was taken over
Sorry,
by everybody.
We need it, Tom.
But he wanted to show Dabbler.
It's a shame that's not around anymore.
No, there's a lot of things that are.
And Corel bought Painter, right?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, and I don't know what they've done with it, but it's
they don't
it's
know. What
frankly,
they've done
more
with
like
it.
Photoshop.
Yeah, yeah. This I keep waiting for Adobe to buy it. So
get it back, and then we can have
take the good things from there, put them into here, and so
but
on.
You can do everything you want to do in Photoshop.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that's
yeah.
really the key.
Yeah.
It's not whether it looks like you know, it's a tube of oil paints that you squirt out. It's, can you do what you need to do?
Yeah,
ultimately, that's... and can you do it easily, or does the program get in the way of that?
That's the point right there. The program doesn't get in the way. It gives you the tools, and you can use them quickly.
Yeah,
you know, you don't have to go in there and try to figure out how, because it adheres to the interface that we had gotten used to with the Mac.
Right,
and that was important.
You've taught millions of people how to use Photoshop. At this point, you feel like it is kind of the language. I mean, you even see things like the GIMP, and they imitate Photoshop in some respects. And when they don't, it's hard to use.
Yeah, yeah. The GIMP, when I was doing Tech TV, every other day I'd get an email. Can you do that with GIMP?
It's free.
It's free.
And you probably can.
Yeah.
But good luck trying to figure it out.
Right.
Yeah. We're talking to Burt Monroy. I want to talk about, we got to talk technique. You got to show me some tips.
Sure.
And I absolutely want to see the new work. Because it's out now. Just came out. An Amsterdam Canal. And it's...
Yeah, it's called Amsterdam Mist.
And we'll show you how... I'm going to do an ad.
Not yet.
See?
Okay.
You got to do an ad.
This
is something you never got to do on Tech TV because we would only give you 7 minutes.
Right. Yeah, and you would talk most of it. That was great, yeah. Yeah, that was fun.
I probably should talk less, shouldn't I? All
no, right. No, we used to have fun. But
What's that? How do you do that?
I learned after a few weeks that, you know, if I have 7 minutes, I have to do my demo in five.
Because Leo's going to be,
we're going to be talking, we're going to be doing a little of this kind of stuff, which is good. I like it, but I have to, you know,
that was
get
tough.
My demos to
and now
work.
You do, you, of course, then you went on and you continue to do the show on Revision 3.
Yeah.
It was called?
Pixel Perfect.
Pixel Perfect, that's right.
Yeah, did 160 episodes.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and I quit.
Are they all still there?
They're still available online. In fact, on the homepage of my site, there's a link.
Excellent. BurtMonroy.com.
Yeah, all those episodes are still free.
Excellent. And now you're doing stuff for Lynda.com. We'll talk about that as well, because you're doing a free program every week, right?
Pixel Play. Well, it's free for a week until the second one comes out.
You got to get it right away.
Yeah.
We'll explain how that works.
Yeah.
All right, good. I wish we had Lynda as a sponsor today. This would be a good time to do a Lynda ad,
yes.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Our show today, though, brought to you by Prosper.com. Actually, this is a really good example of how the internet is transforming well-known existing businesses and making them better for us as users. Prosper is what they call, it's Silicon Valley's answer to the big bank loan. It's called peer-to-peer lending. Prosper brings together, it's a marketplace, brings together people who have money to lend with people who are looking to borrow. What would you do if you, right now, in the next 72 hours, could have $35,000? Would you, and easy, too, you do it all online. Would you pay off your high interest rate credit cards? That would be a good goal. Maybe start a business. There are no outrageous fees. The interest rates are fixed. They don't rise. You'll never set foot in a bank. You can do it all online. In fact, if you go right now to prosper.com/twit, prosper.com/twit, Bert's doing it. You can fill out this simple form. It will not affect your credit score to fill out the form and request a rate. And you'll see it almost instantly. These are unsecured personal loans. So that means no collateral is needed. Yes, they have multi-year terms. There are so many things you could do, home improvements, fix up your kitchen or your bathroom, put an extra bedroom in for the kids. With Prosper's innovative peer-to-peer lending process, it's fast, it's easy, it's friction-free. Prosper.com/twit. And by the way, for a limited time, Prosper is offering you a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get that loan. Prosper.com/twit. I should have had some apple juice before I did this. prosper.com/twit. That's Bert's trick for never popping his peas, especially when you have shows called Pixel Perfect.
Yes, and Pixel Playground.
And Pixel
got a lot of peas in there.
Playground.
Yes.
Anyway, thank you, Prosper, for your support of the show. We really appreciate it, because without Prosper, we couldn't do things like talk to this great guy, Bert Monroy. He's a digital artist and creates really amazing stuff. And really... I think Adobe should love you, because you show that Photoshop is not just about photos.
Exactly, yes.
It can be used by artists to create original works of art.
Yeah, I just did Adobe Max last month, where my sessions were on creating paintings and stuff. And I do a couple of sessions on taking a lot of bad photography and turning it into something else, these dreamscapes that I do.
I love those dreamscapes.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. They've caught on, so...
But do artists, I think artists still must, even today, resist a little bit the idea.
There are some. There's still some. But they're the older ones. The young people nowadays.
They get it. Oh,
yeah, like my little grandniece, she's 3.5 years old. Twice she's FaceTimed me. She got her hold of her mother's phone, and she FaceTimed me. This is a 3.5 year old.
That's pretty
amazing. She knows
how
to get around. She knows how to get around the thing.
iPad, of course, is really great for younger kids.
Yes, it is.
What do you recommend as a drawing program on the iPad? There's Photoshop Touch, but it's not Photoshop.
That's not for artists. It's for photographers.
Yeah.
I would say Art Studio is one of my favorites. That's
Art
the one
Studio.
I use quite a okay. bit. Art Studio.
You actually use that?
I do.
You take it out as a sketchbook?
Yeah, I used to sketch traditionally. Now I sketch on the iPad. And strangely enough, Steve Nelson, the product manager for painting on Photoshop, he's the one that turned me onto it. Because I was going crazy and
look at that,
getting mad at the there it is.
So it's $5. That's the iPhone version we're seeing right there.
Yeah, it's very nice. It's got great brush, and that's very important. The
brushes to you,
to be able to create brushes that do very specific things.
There's a program called Brushes that is also a drawing program.
Yeah, I have that too.
But this is the one you like.
Yeah, this is the one I like the most because of the versatility of everything. It's got multiple layers and stuff, and you can get pretty involved with it.
And it's kind of funny because a Cintiq, the way you work, is a very expensive process and a very expensive program, Photoshop, on a very expensive computer. Here you have an iPad and you have Cintiq-like capability. You're drawing right on the iPad.
I'm
you can get a little stylus if you want.
On a BART somewhere or doing not just sketch.
And it's a $5 program.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. I imagine, I think you're right, that there'll be a lot of people growing up with this who have a real facility and will naturally make the transition to Photoshop.
Yeah, kids just take to this stuff quickly. Yeah. They know automatically. In fact, if there is no interactivity, they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, you know? Like, so, anyway, you just have to watch this?
Yeah.
I want to do something with it.
Yeah, so that I think as time goes by, you know, you'll see more and more of these tools coming out. And a lot of the stuff that's coming out is from young people.
Yeah.
It's stuff that they want these machines to do. So they're actually going out and writing the stuff.
Yeah. All right, let's take a look. This is the new artwork. What's it called?
It's called Amsterdam Mist.
Okay, and we're going to have your computer feeding into the TriCaster.
I'm actually,
so we can.
Before I this is the homepage of my website, and these two pieces here. Times Square used to dominate the site. I'm going to just click into, and we're online right now. So I'm going to click onto Times Square.
So if you go,
there is a story to this.
Do it now because we don't want to swamp his site.
You want to watch this
after this. Go to BERTMONROY.com and you can go. This is what I love. Now this painting has toured as a giant painting. I've seen it with light boxes behind it.
Right, 5 feet by 25 feet.
It glows and it's amazing, and you could spend days just looking at everything. In fact, I'm in it, as I remember.
That's right. You're right down here, right there. See, now here's the cool thing about it is that you have the ability to zoom in, so you can get in real close.
Wow.
And be able to see things here. So there's John and Tom, the guys who wrote it, and there's you right there.
Everybody's in it. Oh, there's Twit.
and here, like, you can go into my daughter's eyes right here. You get in real close right into her eyes right there, and let's see if we can get a little closer here. And you can just about see the reflection in her eye.
Oh, wow.
But what's really cool about this is the guys who did this, okay, a little over a year ago, we were all together in a meeting, and we're talking about my new piece that I'm working on, Amsterdam Mist. And let's go back to the homepage on that. That's this piece
here. It's so beautiful.
And this friend of mine, Richard Harrington, who's one of the two new people in this, because there are some people in this one, he's in here. And he came up with the idea is that when you get in close, what happens, like here, for instance, here, let's back here, I got the painting open in the background.
Well, we actually have it open in Photoshop. Ooh.
There you go. So when you come in real close, like way down here, let's go way back there. See?
Oh, look, you can see through the fog.
Well, not quite. See, it's still
yeah,
foggy.
Yeah, still foggy.
But that's the cool thing. Can you see through the fog? So what happened is the question was, can we do this? And the answer was no. They couldn't do it.
Not
they
in the same working way that you're doing Times Square.
They couldn't get it working.
Why not?
They couldn't get it working on mobile devices.
Okay.
That was the problem. 3 weeks before I'm unveiling this thing down in L.A., they got it working. 3 weeks. The print has already gone because it has to be printed because it's going to be displayed on the show floor. So the print was already being printed and everything.
How do you
else.
Print those? What are those printed on?
That was printed on a...
like a giant HP...
It was a Epson.
Epson does all my printing. Of course, it's the best. You're an Epson guy.
I'm an Epson guy.
Me too.
And they love my stuff because no matter how big they make it, like Times Square, it's going to show. So the print was there so that they could frame it and everything. All of a sudden, they got it working. So now I go in there and I zoom in. It's like, wow, this is no good. If the fog is taken away, it's not going to look good.
Right.
So I had to totally redo things.
So you actually went through the fog thing, and you could see it crisply.
Well, here we are on my site. I'm going to click on it.
So you actually had to redo this 3 weeks before the opening?
even closer. The day before I left for L.A., I sent the last three layers to fix this. So here we are, right? So if I come in, and it's got the same controls as the other guy did. So I come in here, and I say, let's zoom in, and I get in closer, and you see that as it gets closer, and let's get rid of the dock. As it gets closer, it's getting clearer. See?
Oh, look at that.
And as I get closer,
that's what you
fog,
want.
Yeah.
That's how it
as
would work
I go
in real
all
life.
The way, see, the fog is now gone.
So that's the exactly fog is how gone. It would work in real life.
So we can go in there and see
my
the
God.
Detail.
So, oh, my God. So, Bert, you had to paint everything.
Every individual piece. The trees took 10 days apiece. That's why it took me 22 months for this. But everything, all the bikes, everything. So as we start to pull back and we come in here and start pulling back, you'll see that the
you know what
fog
I like
will start
about
coming
this
back
painting?
In.
It's peaceful. You feel like you're there.
That's what a lot of people have said. It's the first it's painting. Very... Well, I think it's the first painting that people wouldn't mind hanging it over their couch.
It's gorgeous.
Nobody
I
wants a rusty bar sign or something.
No, but I want to be there.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be there in
Now, how do you do this? Do you take pictures? Do you go visit
well,
it?
Well, this is the very first one that I actually... was inspired by the picture. Usually I am inspired by the scene. So I'll take some shots of it, I'll do some sketches of it, and I'll take some notes. Times Square, I always wanted to do Times Square. Yeah. So there it wasn't that I was there, I just decided
it's a natural,
I wanted
isn't
to
it?
Do it.
For somebody like you, natural.
I went back to Times Square 12 times, did different photo studies. So I would go in and like I'd say, okay, I'm gonna need this light and this garbage can and this phone booth, how do they look? Right? There were still phone booths in those days. And then I went back to Times Square, and I would sit there and look at my notes, and then I'd take pictures of the things that I needed. Well, this piece here, I'm going through these old shots. I was there in 2008. I took looking at some old shots. In fact, I was looking for material for Dreamscapes. And I see this, right? And I look at it, and I say, this is cool. And my wife is looking on my shoulder. She says, that would make a great painting. And I'm looking at it. I says, it would.
It's beautiful.
So I can't go back to... Amsterdam at the drop of a hat.
Right.
So what I did is I plotted where I was based on my sequence of photographs. And using technology, Google Street View, what I did is I went up and down the street.
You used Street View.
Yeah. What does that door look like? I stood in front of the door and looked at it. And
so this is exactly how it would look if you were there.
Yeah.
This isn't a painting that from your imagination.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, but it's how it would be. You'd
right.
See
all,
that door.
All the cars, like none of the details in my original photograph. But the cars, I did research on European cars, all online. Bicycles, I did basically Belgian bicycles. Not Belgian, but from the Netherlands, bicycles. And then I did neighboring countries. So I figured I can get...
So the bikes weren't there, but you found Dutch bikes.
Bikes that would be... Yeah, bikes that would fit the whole scene. So everything was authentic.
Are there any Easter eggs in this?
There's tons of Easter eggs. There's always Easter eggs. Yeah, I'll give you a couple. Here, let's... let's go.
I do... I'm sincere when I say I want to go there. That makes...
Yeah.
There's something about the fog, especially... It gives us this peace.
Well, this file here that we're looking at, you notice it's called Layered Fog.
Yeah.
This is the file that I gave them. This is not the print file. This is the file I gave them. And if we look at the layers, you see that there are quite a few layers of fog.
And is that all fog?
The gray ones are fog. The purple ones are seen, like the foreground. Right? So if I take away each layer of fog here and I start turning them off, you see that the fog is starting
what
to
magic
disappear.
Is this?
So I'm going to eliminate all the fog. So
how do you do fog?
Well, I'll show you. It's a fog brush I created.
Doesn't this feel like magic?
So there, now the fog is gone. So now we can get in close and we look at the, well, here, let's say, for instance, we'll look at this little guy here. And let me hit F to go full screen.
Oh, yeah.
See, my first solo book is in the basket.
Oh, you put a book in the basket. Yeah.
There's Wacom. There's Lynda.com. There's,
oh,
there's my
so...
birthday.
Oh, that's so
and
great.
And way over here, every license plate
says something?
Says something like, here, I got married in 1989, oh. Moved from Albany to Berkeley in 94.
Oh, that's, you know, so moved cool. From, your life is in this.
New York to California in 93. Oh. Yes, everything has some kind of meaning.
Does,
in here.
Is anything in this painting expressionist, or is everything realist in this painting?
Everything is pretty much realist.
So if I look at a leaf, it looks like a leaf. It doesn't look like a happy little cloud blob. It's all. They're all actual, detailed.
Leaves.
Wow.
There's some leaves.
You draw every one of those?
Well, you want to know, here's a funny thing, okay? Like here, look at all these.
Those you can't draw. You have to use a brush or something, right?
No, these are basically two leaves.
Repeated?
Yeah.
But changed each time.
They've been changed every time. So here, I'll give you a demo now. Here, I'll show you. We'll open up, and here you'll see his art. Here's Amsterdam, and it's very important to be organized. And here's trees in the working folder. Here's trees. And here's some leaves.
Each of these are layers, Photoshop layers. Oh.
So here you can see that.
There's the leaves.
This is one leaf that's got a longer point than this one. Wait, nope. Where's the other one? Wait, somewhere in here I got this one.
And then you give it different
shades.
There we go.
Shades. Just has a short point.
Okay, short
so
stem.
That first one is the actual leaf, and then all these are variations of that leaf.
Right.
So if we go in here, let's just go ahead and open this guy. And so there's this, and these are variations of that with different colors and so on.
See, it would be easy, and a lot of people might take a shortcut to kind of make a leaf brush and just brush the tree. In fact,
well, I did for the further trees, but these leaves are real close.
Yeah, you see them.
So
you
a brush isn't going to work because it won't have the veins and stuff.
Yep.
So that's not going to work. So I'll tell you what we'll do is I'm going to just take this one leaf right here and right through there, and let me just add to this.
So you're selecting the leaf with the brush, the magic.
Okay, now I'm in that layer. Yeah, okay. So I'm going to go ahead and copy that. I'm going to copy it, and I'm going to start a new file, which is going to reflect what's in the clipboard right now. So I'm going to make it 500
make it
by
a little bigger.
800, just to give myself
expanding the canvas around the leaf.
Yep. And then I'm going to paste. So there it is.
Okay.
So now I want this leaf to be laying on the ground. Okay. I want to give it some dimension. So what I'm going to do is right off the bat, I'm going to go in there and say, warp it. So I'm going to grab this bottom part here and just drag it all the way up like that. And then take these handles and bring them up. Now, that white thing that's starting to happen, that's okay. That's just showing me the bounding area for the actual image. So I'm going to just bring this guy up like that. And then that's good. So I'm going to click OK.
Oh, look at that. You bent the leaf.
And there you can see. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this little piece up here, right? And I'm going to bend that one just a little bit. We'll do a little warp on this just to kind of bend this guy over just a little bit like that. Okay? So there. So we got that. So now what I'm going to do is I take my lasso and I'm just going to select this portion right here. And of course, in the actual work, I take more time.
Yeah.
So I got that. Yeah. So now I can go in there and I can go in and say a little brute force, just darken that bottom part because that's away from us.
Yeah.
Just about
it's out of the light.
A little like that. Click OK. And I might add a little more. So I just take a little burn tool and just darken it a little more in there. Right, so then I'll do an inverse on the selection, so everything else is selected, and I'll throw a little darkness right up in there, just like that, and then I'll do a little dodging, and we'll just throw a little highlight right through there, and there you can see that we got a leaf that's
great, and it's unique.
Yeah, so every one of those leaves was manipulated that way.
And now you see, folks, you would I guarantee you, everybody at home said, "Oh yeah, that's easy. I could do that." And then try it.
Well, once you notice stuff,
once you're good at it, all the steps make sense. Yeah. And this is why you got to go to lynda.com and take Burke's courses for the first week of every it's Pixel
Playground. Yeah.
You can watch it for free.
Yeah.
And then the next one comes out, the old one, you have to be a Lynda subscriber.
It goes behind the paywall.
So, of course, our audience has, many of you are members, and we have an offer, a seven-day trial and all that. But this is worth it. It's free, and they give it away, and it's awesome.
Yeah, that was part of the deal to do it, because I wanted to capture the Pixel Perfect crowd.
Yeah.
Those young kids, which were mostly
who
were
watching
young kids,
Revision 3.
Who can't afford the subscription, but they want to see these tips.
Yeah.
So I said, it has to be free. Nice. I want it to be free all the time, but they said, no,
that's perfect.
Subscription. But
that's perfect.
Being free for that first week, then
that'll
appeal to all those young kids.
Thank you for doing that. All right, let's see some more. I want to see some more.
Sure.
more stuff.
Okay. Well, that's the basically. Now, the trees, that was a whole other story. But
isn't he brilliant? And somebody in the chat room said this, and I think the thing we love about Bert is that not only does he know all this stuff, he gives it away. You just give it away. You don't. A lot of people would say, oh, no, this is trade secrets. But you are very generous.
Yeah, well, I remember an artist, when I wrote my first solo book, she told me that I was crazy. I shouldn't do this. You're giving away your secrets. I said, they're not secrets. They're techniques I came up with. If I teach them to somebody else, I don't expect them to do what I do. I expect them to do something cooler than what
I did.
That's
so great.
And that's what's important for me. I'm not in competition. I don't join contests, none of that stuff. To me, the joy is learning along the way. And then what I've learned, I'm glad to share because it's fun. Because the good part about it is that people are going to send me stuff. And I see things that are really cool and I get inspired. So by seeing what they've done with what I've taught them and how they took it a step further, that's a reward for me.
Well, our reward is getting to see the great art and enjoying Bert Monroy. Let's do some more, Bert.
All right, so
just a little bit more. I know we've been here a while.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll look at the cars. I was just talking about the cars. The cars on this side here, all these cars, all the hubcaps, they had to be realistic. They had to be real
and
authentic.
Yeah.
Because somebody's going to write to me and say, hey, you know, that's not the way the thing looks and so on. So I'm going to go in here and let me go. I'm going to switch to Illustrator.
You're doing this on a MacBook Pro.
Right now, yes.
At home, you use a Mac Pro? What do you use?
I have a Mac Pro, yes.
Have you looked at the new 5K iMac?
Yes, I have.
But you can't use a Cintiq.
But then I can't use the Cintiq. Like my friends at Apple, they say, oh, but the thing is, I don't work on the monitor. I use an Apple 30-inch monitor as my display.
That's kind of the reference.
That's where I look. Yeah,
but
that's what I'm looking at.
The Cintiq is a display that you can use touch on.
Yeah, so and there's new stuff coming out sometime next year that's going to be even better. So what is this?
And by the way, if you go to BertMonroy.com, you can really zoom in. This is made. This piece, unlike other pieces you've done, is made to be seen on your website.
Yeah, yes, it is.
That's really neat.
So I got
what a gift.
This is the stuff I was showing at Max. I'm just going to open it up from here. And in cars here. Okay, here's the hubcap. Let's see, hubcaps.
Morris
AI.
In our chat room says Bert can give it away because no one's going to work as hard as he does.
Well, they better be prepared to be declared insane.
I remember when Photoshop came out with brushes, and you were really instrumental in making that brush tool sing.
Yeah, well, what's cool about it is the guy who wrote the brush engine is a guy named Jerry Harris, who wrote Pixel Paint.
Oh.
How's that for a little
so it all goes,
world?
Yeah. That's neat.
Now, I use Illustrator.
That's a hubcap.
Yeah, this is Illustrator, which is basically my pencil on the canvas. Now, there's a lot of functions in Illustrator that are not in Photoshop for dealing with vectors.
But so the difference is Photoshop, you're working on a bitmap, a dot for dot of the image.
Yeah.
Illustrator, which many people use hand in hand with Photoshop, but it's a graphic design tool, and it's about the shape. So
yeah, vectors.
It'll describe the circle as not dot, 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 and circle,
right.
But in fact, it's a circle of a certain diameter, of a certain width of pixel, that kind of thing. And it's all done, it's basically a mathematical description of the image.
Which means it's resolution independent. You take those pixels from Photoshop and blow them up to the side of a building, they're going to be big, giant pixels. You take that Illustrator file and blow it up, it'll be just as clean because it's saying, well, here's a circle within an 8.5x11 page. Here's a circle within a 50x90 building. See, so it's
still a perfect circle.
Yeah. And the reason they're so small is because, as opposed to a Photoshop file, because those pixels, even if they're white, they're still 16.8 million colors. Okay? So every one of those pixels has a lot of information, whether they're black, white, or any color. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Illustrator, there really isn't anything there except a description of it, text. And text tends to be very small.
Right.
So what you're seeing is what they call the appearance. You're not actually creating that line. You're seeing the line based on the appearance. What you're really creating is from this point, there is a line of a certain thickness and color.
A mathematical description.
Right. So that's
so
why it's so small.
What do you use Illustrator for? Geometric shapes?
My shapes. And in this particular case of a little function called transform again, which is so crucial, and a way to be able to control things. So what I've done is here's a basic hubcap. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go in here and I'm going to select these individual pieces that I've created, these five little shapes here, which are going to be going around the entire piece, right? There's going to be five of them.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I go in there and I compute, well, big computation is I divide 360 by 5 and I get 72. So 72 automatically tells me that that's going to be the what I need. So I place it at the center and it tells me when it's at the center, and I'll click my option button and click, and it brings up my control. So I enter the 72.
That's
right.
That's
there.
The angle.
Right?
Yep.
So I say make a copy. And then I hit Command-D, Command-D, Command-D.
Well, that was easy.
There they are.
Oh, man.
So then I select this. I select all, and I copy them, and I bring them into Photoshop. Now, in some cases, I add the color in Illustrator, like railings. I'll show you that in a few seconds.
Something that doesn't need to be detailed color. It could
right.
be a gradient
exactly.
or a solid color.
A solid color or just a very complex shape that's going to be tiny.
Right.
So I'll do that. But in most cases, what I'll do is when I paste it in Photoshop, I bring it in as paths. So when we go to Photoshop.
So that's important. So you're not bringing in a bitmap.
No, I'm bringing in paths, which I will then manipulate in Photoshop, which I did here. So we'll go in here and we'll open up those hubcaps so you can see that. And then we'll go back.
Paths are like strokes of a pen.
Exactly. That's why I call it the pencil on the canvas for me. That's exactly what they are. So here's the hubcaps in Photoshop.
See, I did learn something from you all those years ago.
There we go. So here you'll see the paths. Here they are. I brought them in. There they are. See? So in here, I'll take each one of those paths and start to build up the object. So when we start looking at it, here it is right here. So let's go down here. And what's turned on right now is body. There's two of them in here. There's a second one. It's this one and this one.
So these are all layers on top.
Here's the other one. Here's the other one.
Okay.
Let's turn this guy off. There he goes.
Wow.
So there's a second one that was done in this file. So here. So there's the color. And then on top of that, there's these little indents. Now, all I did is I fill them in with a gradient, give them a little noise and so on. Then there's this little indentation. And it looks like it's indented because of the layer style. It's given a bevel and emboss. Depending on the direction of the light, it's going to create the illusion that something's going in or coming out. See?
That's the bevel and emboss layer.
Yeah. And then here, the light's from above. Here, the light's from below. So that's why it's creating that illusion.
You must always keep in your mind, though, the lighting. I mean, you don't want to have two different suns.
No. That's crucial to make things look right. Lighting, shadows, all that stuff is very important to get it
even
right.
Even if we don't know why, we'll look at it and go, there's something off here.
Exactly. And there's the logo. And then there's this little thing. Now, you'll notice that these are slightly off. Because if you look at the path, see, they're off. That's because these hubcaps are viewed at an angle. The cars are all at a slight angle. So since those holes are deep inside that indent, when you turn it
there's
at an angle,
parallax.
They're going to... That's right. So that's why I move them over, right? So then once they're all done, what I do is I go in there and I merge them. Merge the visible ones. Now, if I just say merge visible like this, merge visible, all the layers went away. You see that?
Yeah, they just have a flat object.
Those modifier keys, the option, command, shift, they change the way things work. By holding on my option key and saying that same command, merge visible, you'll see it's going to work differently. See, the layer stayed, but it created a new layer that has that finished.
That's a single layer in that whole batch.
Yep.
And that's the one you'll use in the painting?
So, so now I've got to put this at an angle. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit command T so I can tighten it a little bit
tool.
Like this. Right
here
there.
We go again.
And then it's still... The distance here is equal to this, which is not giving me the angle. So what I'll do is I'll just give it a little warp right here. Say warp, and I'll just grab the center point and pull it out a little bit.
Do you do this by eye? You don't do it with the math. You do it by eye, right?
In most cases, I'll do it by eye. Yeah. I have a trained eye to see this kind of stuff.
Right.
Okay, so I do it by eye. In some cases, it needs to be mathematical. But even when it's mathematical, it won't look right. The balance has to be created visually. So my years of training of doing that kind of stuff, I will rely on what I see rather than what I'm supposed to do.
People like Bert are always looking at the world in a different way. They're looking at things and they see specular. You see different things than I see.
Yeah.
You see specular highlights. You see angles. You see distortions. You see parallax. Yeah. And it's in your brain because you've been observing this
whole
time.
I tell my students to go through life with their eyes open. You know, how does this shadow work? Well, look at it. You know,
it's there to see.
There's shadows everywhere to see what they do. You know, study what they do.
Often when you first start in art school, that's the first thing that they're teaching you is open your eyes.
Yeah, I did
start
a course.
Looking.
I did a course on lynda.com called artistic concepts, because there are a lot of things that aren't being taught anymore. They teach them Photoshop, but they don't teach them composition and shading and that kind of stuff. So I set up this course to explain perspective and how it works. There are mechanical ways of doing perspective, but sometimes you need to go in there and play with things yourself and create your own perspective. So,
do you think it'd be useful for kids to start with real materials, or is it okay to start digitally?
It's okay to start digitally. It is. Yeah, I don't think it's necessary that what the medium. It's what they're thinking and, yeah. and solving the problem of creating it.
They used to make us paint things upside down, so that you or draw you know draw drawings upside down, so that you would see instead of. Oh, I know that's a person, and I'm going to start at the head. And if it's upside down, you're looking at the shapes, at the colors.
I learned that trick in school because I was always getting in trouble for drawing.
Yeah.
So I'd have to get a note to sign by my mother.
Yeah.
So I realized that if you're trying to duplicate a signature, you're looking at the A
right.
and the M.
You see the letters.
But if you turn it upside down, just you're seeing shapes. So it made it real easy to forge your signature. So, I got away with it all those years. It was great.
It's always such a pleasure to see you. And every time I see you, I think, why aren't we doing a show with Bert? But we don't have to. It's at lynda.com.
There you go.
You do it out of your studio.
Well, Pixel Playground is out of my studio. The classes that I do.
You go down there.
Like, for instance, there's the second series or the second volume of The Making of Amsterdam just came out, which is The Natural Elements. The first one was The Structures. The second one is The Natural Elements. And the third one is The Vehicles, which
so
is
that,
the boats
so
and cars.
If
and
people want to learn about how you made this, lynda.com has basically yeah. all the techniques you use
everything
as a class so
yeah.
that you can really, as several classes,
yeah.
so you can really learn.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving that away.
Yeah, it's fun.
I'm
and,
so
and,
thrilled.
See the comments and what people do with it. That's the best part. Yeah,
I bet.
Yeah.
Bert, it's always great to see you. Thank
it's
you for
cool.
coming down here and spending
it was fun.
Some time with us.
All right.
Nice to see you
Good
again.
To see you
Keep
again.
Making the great art.
Oh,
what
I'm
are you going to do next?
Possibly.
You're done with Amsterdam? You got some... what are you thinking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I'm thinking about a couple... Well, I want to... first of all, I've been thinking of the 3D a lot because not so much 3D function, but 3D printing. So I've been trying to
Ooh.
Think of some... They keep bugging me to go down to Adobe and play with their printers. And I
Ooh.
Saw that Home Depot is selling 3D printers now.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about doing some stuff that I
think that's cool.
That'd be tangible, that I can hold and stuff.
I like that idea.
Yeah, and so... I'm always thinking of whatever's next. I've got a lot of paintings in mind, but none of them right now are challenging anymore because,
it's
the things that I've
new.
Got. Yeah, it's got to be something new. It'll be something sometime this year or next year.
Come back and talk about it.
You got it.
We do Triangulation every Monday. It's first show of my week, and I love, as you can see, I love the chance to sit down and talk with such great people like Bert Monroy. Will you join us 11 a.m. Pacific? That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1900 UTC. It's a new time because we've exited daylight savings time, summertime. We're now in our wintertime. So 1900 UTC. Please come by. Watch live. I watch the chat room. It's a great way for me to get feedback and questions. But if you can't, don't worry. Every show we do is available and always will be available at twit.tv/TRI. Or if you just want to get them every time they come out, if you want to subscribe, you can do that on almost any podcatch program, iTunes, of course, Xbox Music, the podcast apps on your smart device, your mobile phone. And we have our own Twit apps, thanks to our great third-party developers on almost every platform, including Roku. Subscribe. That way you'll get each and every week you get a Triangulation. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Triangulation. Bye-bye.